Bloodlines, written by Ruth Rendell and read by Nigel Anthony.
Bloodlines. I think you know who killed your stepfather, said Wexford. It was a throwaway line uttered on parting and over his shoulder as he reached the door. A swift exit was, however, impossible. The moment he got up, he had not to duck his head merely, but bend himself almost double. The girl he spoke to was a small woman, the boyfriend she lived with no more than 5'6". Life in the caravan, he thought, would otherwise have been insupportable. Stuck in the doorway, he said, when she made no reply, "You won't mind if I come back in a day or two and we'll have another talk."
"All the same if I do, isn't it?"
"You don't have to talk to me, Miss Hedden. It's open to you to say no." It would all have been more dignified if he could have stood up and faced her, but Wexford wasn't much concerned with dignity. He spoke rather gravely, but with gentleness. "But if you've no objection, we'll continue this conversation on Monday. I've a feeling you know a lot more than you've told me." She said it, one of those phrases that invariably means its opposite.
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"That's unworthy of someone of your intelligence," he said, and he had meant it. He opened the door and climbed out. Climbing, half-crouched, was the only way. It was with relief that he put his feet on the ground, got his head clear, and straightened himself up to his full height. She had followed him and stood there, holding the door, a pretty young woman of 20, who looked even younger than her age, because her blonde hair was waist-length and her white blouse schoolgirlish. "Monday, then," Wexford said. "Shall we say 3-ish?
"Suit yourself."
With one of her flashes of humour, she said,
"You must feel like a Rottweiler in a rabbit hutch in here."
He smiled. "You may be right. It's true my bite is worse than my bark." Possibly digesting this, she closed the door without another word. He picked his way back to the car where Donaldson waited at the wheel. A path of cinders made a just usable track across the corner of a muddy field. In the cold haze, the shape of a cottage converted from a railway carriage could just be seen against a grey tangle of wilderness. 2 inches of rain had fallen in the week since Tom Peterlee's death, and the sky of massive grey cumulus was loaded with more. "We live in a caravan culture, Steve," he said to Donaldson. "As homes, I mean, not mobile tents. You can see 2 more over there, travelling farm workers, I imagine. The one on the corner patch up here has been here at least 2 years, and to my knowledge is home to 4 people, a dog and a hamster." "It wouldn't suit me, sir. Though, mind you, I'd have gone down on my bended knees in gratitude for a caravan when the wife and me were first married and living with her mum." Wexford nodded, invisibly, from the back. "I'll go by way of Feverals, will you? I don't want to stop, just take a look." The Kenhurst Road headed from the south for Edenwick and King's Markham. Rain began to spit against the windscreen as they came to the outskirts of Edenwick and its half-mile-long village street. After the houses ended, Feverell's buildings appeared as the car rounded a loop-like bend in the road. The farm shop remained closed, though a wooden board offering for sale apples, pears, plums, and walnuts for pickling still stood by the gate. Wexford told Donaldson to stop the car and park for a few moments. Let Heather Peterlee see him. That sort of thing did no harm. He looked, for the dozenth time, at the shack that had been a shop, the huddle of wooden buildings, the house itself, and the inevitable caravan. "She'll have a job selling it, sir," said Donaldson, as if reading his mind. "People won't much fancy the idea."
"The murder took place in the kitchen," Wexford said rather sharply. "Not in that thing."